you run for president? Do you ever think about that?
People want me to all the time.
What about you?
I don't like it.
Why?
Can you imagine how controversial I'd be? You think about him with the women. How about me with the women?
One day this past May, Donald Trump's eldest son, this from the New York Times, Donald Trump Jr. reached out to a senior advisor to Governor John Kasich of Ohio, who left the presidential race just a few weeks earlier. As a candidate, Kasich declared in March that Trump was really not prepared to be president of the United States. And the following month, he took the highly unusual step of coordinating with his rival, Senator Ted Cruz, in an effort to deny Trump the nomination. But according to the Kasich advisor, who spoke only under the condition that he not be named, Donald Jr. wanted to make him an offer nonetheless. Did he have any interest in being the most powerful vice president in history, i.e. the president? When Kasich's advisor asked how this would be the case, Donald Jr. explained that his father's vice president would be in charge of domestic and foreign policy, which means everything. Outside of that, there's nothing else. We don't even have a space program anymore. You would be the president as the vice president. Then the advisor asked, what would Trump be in charge of? Making America great again was the casual reply. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the fire you can't put out, episode number 169. My name is Melvin. Always happy to be here with you on the weeks that I am not. I miss you. But now that you're here, it's 1968 all over again.
As we look at America, we see cities enveloped in smoke and flame. We hear sirens in the night. We see Americans dying on distant battlefields abroad. We see Americans hating each other, fighting each other, killing each other at home. And as we see and hear these things, millions of Americans cry out in anguish. Did we come all this way for this? Did American boys die in Normandy and Korea and in Valley Forge for this? Listen to the answer to those questions. It is another voice. It is a quiet voice in the tumult of the shouting. It is the voice of the great majority of Americans, the forgotten Americans, the non-shouters, the non-demonstrators. They're not racist or sick. They're not guilty of the crime that plagues the land.
When Richard Nixon gave his acceptance speech back in 1968, it was considered the darkest up until that time. And there he said it. The quiet ones, the ones who don't protest, and they are not sick, and they are not racist, and they are the majority, the silent majority for Trump. Crime has been dropping precipitously year after year. And yet, every time a Republican hits the stage, if a Democrat is president, oh my God, the whole world's on fire, and it's all his fault. But if a Republican is president, hey, don't you love how great things are going?
The wave of crime is not going to be the wave of the future in the United States of America. We shall reestablish freedom from fear in America so that America can take the lead in reestablishing freedom from fear in the world. And to those who say that law and order is the code word for racism, there and here is a reply. Our goal is justice. Justice for every American. If we are to have respect for law in America, we must have laws that deserve respect. Just as we cannot have progress without order, we cannot have order without progress. And so as we commit to order tonight, let us commit to progress.
Law and order was the Nixon line, and that is the line that is now being used by one Donald J. Trump. Nixon had a secret plan to end the Vietnam War. Donald Trump has a secret plan to defeat ISIS. Would you please share the secret plan with us now? What you are hearing in the background is radio silence. So, when they went to the convention to nominate one Donald J. Trump, the big story, the story that everybody was talking about, was Melania's speech. It was a much hyped speech, and my God, we just could not wait to hear it, because it was going to be so great. And then Michelle Obama delivered it.
And Barack and I were raised with so many of the same values. Like, you work hard for what you want in life.
The values that you work hard for what you want in life.
That your word is your bond, that you do what you say you're going to do.
that your word is your bond, and you do what you say and keep your promise.
That you treat people with dignity and respect.
That you treat people with respect.
Because we want our children and all children in this nation to know that the only limit to the height of your achievements is the reach of your dreams and your willingness to work hard for them.
Because we want our children in this nation to know that the only limit to your achievements is the strength of your dreams and your willingness to work for them.
Now, it was a Twitter user that caught the similarities there and then put the two videos side by side and said, this is clearly plagiarism. And then that became the story. So you know what did not become the story? The ethnocentrist horror show that was the GOP convention. This from Salon. There's no way to spin this as good for the Trump campaign. What happened with Melania is a disaster, full stop. But there is surely at least some upside in the idea that the media is talking about the plagiarism scandal instead of the parade of ethno-nationalist bigotry that defined all the rest of the first night. If you watched the RNC on television, you saw the highlights. Giuliani, Trump, Donald and Melania, Joni Ernst. But if you were there in the audience, you saw the full array of speakers. The overriding theme was fear. Fear of a brown horde.
We must maintain law and order at the highest level, or we will cease to have a country. 100%, we will cease to have a country. I am the law and order candidate.
Patricia Smith hit the stage, mother of Sean Smith, and she condemned Hillary Clinton in the harshest possible terms. I blame Hillary Clinton personally for the death of my son, she said, before winning a roar from the crowd with Hillary for prison. She deserves to be in stripes.
This is a test. This is a test of the right-wing troll notification system. This is only a test.
Benghazi.
This has been a test of the right-wing troll notification system. Had this been an actual issue, you would have been instructed where to tune in your area for half-baked information. This concludes this test of the right-wing troll notification system.
The Benghazi talking point is a big one for them. They've been using it for some time, and it's pretty clear that they don't really care about the deaths. Because remember, we've lost over 5,000 people in both Iraq and Afghanistan. When Bush was president, we had a dozen consulate attacks that led to the deaths of over 60 people. And yet, the Republican Party only wants to talk about these four people as if these were the only four people that have ever died ever during a war. So they bring Patricia on stage. And she's a grieving mother. And she should be allowed to express herself in whatever way possible. But the way they decided to use her, in my opinion, and in the opinion of folks who were there, it's pretty gross.
So it does talk about a misunderstanding of the security situation, a misread of how dangerous Benghazi was, and then a response that, whether it was perfect or imperfect, has been studied time and time again, but that ultimately left an ambassador and three others killed. But to hear this grieving mother, and you can only sympathize with her grief, to lay the blame directly at Hillary Clinton, saying that Hillary was responsible for her son's death, personally responsible, it doesn't correspond with the facts as I know them and as I've read them in subsequent investigations. And it does seem to be a manipulation of someone's grief and going to a very dark place.
Richard Engel was there, and he covered it at length. So after this happens, the Clinton campaign just steers clear of it. They don't get involved in it. They don't answer to it. We'll get into what happened when the Democrats decided to bring a grieving family on stage and what happened there. But we're not done with the ethnocentrist horror show yet. And then, of course, Giuliani hit the stage.
America! Victory against them! Greatness! You know who you are! Terrorism! He's not going to like my telling you this. America! And he will be the leader. Kill us. Thank you. One America! Where did it go? From the top to the bottom, from the middle to the side. This is a good man, an America. I am sick and tired of it. For America!
So that was the entire speech. And if you missed it, I can play it again. I can play it in its entirety, and that's essentially all you would hear. So, this from Salon. Having covered the threat from radical Islam, the speakers moved on to the perceived threat from the border. Attendees watched a video from Kent Terry and Kelly Terry Willis, siblings whose brother was killed on duty as a Border Patrol agent. Then they heard from Mary Ann Mendoza, whose son was killed in a car accident involving an unauthorized immigrant, followed by Sabine Durden, whose son died in a similar car accident, and concluding with Jameel Shah, whose son was killed in a gang shootout involving an unauthorized immigrant. So here's the thing. If you're involved in an accident in this country, if you commit a crime in this country, that's bad. But if you're from this country and you kill somebody, that's fine. If you're from this country and you commit a crime and you kill somebody, that's fine. If you're free, hey, stop. It's always awful whenever this stuff happens. But what happened at the RNC was an entire string of people that had one message, one singular message, and it was this: be afraid of brown people. Donald Trump essentially began his, I'll call it a career now, I suppose, in politics, even though I feel like it's going to be pretty short-lived when he loses this November. He began it back in 2012 by questioning President Obama's birth certificate, which had long been settled, even amongst the people at Fox News. But, hold on, that guy's brown. There's no way that guy can be president.
You know, in the days before my father passed away in 2007, he joked with CNN that he dreamed that Chelsea Clinton had interviewed him in about the three greatest threats facing this nation. He replied, those three greatest threats are Osama, Obama, and your mama.
Republican Wonk wrote after witnessing the parade of speakers, the Trumpified GOP had only two policy proposals that night: deport Mexicans and kill Muslims. And the RNC had a whole lot of trouble finding speakers. Nobody wanted to appear on stage seemingly endorsing Donald Trump. So they really had to reach far and wide to find some people. And they brought out the all-powerful Scott Baio. Wait, Scott Baio had sent out a tweet a few days earlier with the C word behind Hillary Clinton. He disagrees with her politically, and that's fine. But when you go after somebody like that, that's clearly misogyny. And when he sat down with an anchor from CNN, she wasn't going to let him get away with it.
One of the things that caught my eye was this tweet that you sent out July 10th, a photo of Hillary Clinton standing in front of the word count. Mm-hmm. The O is blocking, so it appears that she is standing in front of the C word.
Right.
Did you think about that in church when just you tweeted
offered,
it out?
That's just offered up without commentary. That was just put
yeah,
up.
Yeah, but
there
you, was know a what it, you know what it meant when you tweeted it out.
I just put it up there.
I'm asking, you know, you're writing your speech in church. You talk about religion coming back to this country and us right. having a moral barometer. Where was your moral compass when you put a photo of a woman that you disagree with politically, and that's
right.
fine? But would
Tamara,
you
can look at
that?
It any way you want. It's the word yeah. count. That's what she's standing in front of. I just put it up
yeah.
there. It's,
okay.
There's no commentary attached yeah. to it. I didn't call her anything.
Actually, the commentary that was attached to it is this is the best tweet in the world, or words to that effect. But wait, let us get back to the ethnocentrist nightmare. So then, the king. The RNC king, the GOP king, the snake oil salesman, the charlatan, hit the stage and gave one of the longest acceptance speeches ever because the guy really just likes to hear himself talk. And just when you thought things couldn't get brighter under that tent, he began to finish.
Lastly, and very importantly, we must immediately suspend immigration from any nation that has been compromised by terrorism until such time as proven vetting mechanisms have been put in place. We don't want them in our country.
This is our country. white, ethnocentrism, cultural chauvinism, white. This is our country. We're a country of immigrants, an entire nation of immigrants. We all came from someplace else, unless, of course, you were a Native American, and even with that, a full Native American. I'm Native American, but I'm not full. Even I came from somewhere else, but my skin is white, so I would have had no problem getting into the RNC convention. African Americans, on the other hand, is a bit of a struggle. This from Slate. Lowest share of black delegates at any GOP in a century. After the loss in 2012, the GOP decided to do a post-mortem. And they realized that they weren't getting enough African Americans, that they weren't getting enough Latinos, that they weren't getting enough gay people. And they said, next time around, we have to find a way to bring more people in. And then they decided to nominate a white supremacist. And along with that came a lot of hatred, screaming hatred, for people who were not white Christian males. Quote, at last official count, there were expected to be a total of 18 black delegates at the Republican National Convention. Yes, 18, roughly 0.7% of the 2,472 delegates in Cleveland. This year's share of black delegates is the lowest one at a Republican National Convention in more than a century. Yes, a century and a century. What's a century? We talk about this all the time. When conservatives say that they want to make America great again, what year are they talking about? 100 years ago. How do you make America great again? We go back to 100 years ago. And their convention decided to do just that.
I have to start out by saying one very important thing. I'm not politically correct. And I hate political correctness.
Ben Carson is an African American. I think everybody knows that. And when Republicans talk about political correctness, what they mean is they would really like to call women the C-word. They would really like to call blacks the N-word. They would really like to call Mexicans beaners. I can barely say it. They would like to be able to use their horrible racist language out loud, but damn you and your political correctness. At the Democratic Convention, the mothers of slain African Americans decided to hit the stage. And they had a message. Our sons' deaths did not have to happen, but they will not be in vain. And when we speak out about the racism that led to the death of our children long before their time, we are not being politically correct.
This isn't about being politically correct. This is about saving our children.
Quite a few of the speakers that hit the stage at the DNC convention made jokes about how racist Trump is, because that's what dominates over on the conservative side right now. That's what dominated their entire convention. That's what dominates radio. That's what dominates television. The fact what he said about Mexicans, the fact that he said that blacks have a laziness gene, what he said about Muslims, and more than a few Latinos hit the stage and made cracks at his expense.
In 1922, the only grandparent that I would ever know came to the United States from Mexico. She wasn't a rapist or a murderer. She was a six-year-old orphan. But as a girl, she walked past storefront signs that read no dogs or Mexicans allowed.
I wonder how some of the pundits, not at Fox, I understand what you have to do to work at Fox, but I wonder for CNN and for MSNBC, how they end up with some of the people that they invite on TV to really just fill air while they wait for the election results to come in. One of the ones I've got a massive problem with is Jeffrey Lord. Jeffrey Lord is a stone-cold racist and a liar. And then on MSNBC, they decided to have Steve King on. I was going to play the segment, but just let me do this. This from Dead State. U.S. Congressman Steve King asked a shocked panel on MSNBC to name a subgroup that contributed more to civilization than white Christians. Quote, this whole business does get a little tired, Charlie King said. I would ask you to go back through history and figure out where all these contributions that have been made by these other categories of people that you were talking about. Where did any other subgroup of people contribute more to civilization than white people? Chris Hayes interjected. Well, than Western civilization itself, that's rooted in Western Europe and Eastern Europe and in the United States of America and every other place where Christianity settled in the world. That's all of Western civilization. The word that the racists have decided to use, because they realize how toxic it sounds when they use the word white, is to say European. That's what David Duke says. He says Europeans. I stand up for European Americans. He doesn't say white. And that's the line that a lot of Republicans have decided to take. We stand up for Europeans. A lot of folks think that the democratic process, the Democrats' process for choosing their nominee was brutal. Dishonest. Tilted towards Hillary, that's for sure. But brutal, nowhere near as brutal as the Republicans was. And hardly anybody took more heat from the Donald than did Ted Cruz. So when Ted Cruz hit the stage, we're supposed to be a unified party now. And then Ted Cruz said something absolutely unforgivable.
Don't stay home in November. If you love our country and love your children as much as I know that you do, stand and speak and vote your conscience. Vote for candidates up and down the ticket who you trust to defend our freedom and to be faithful to the Constitution.
He decided to hit the stage and say, vote your conscience. And everybody held their breath. Vote your conscience should mean vote for your candidate, the candidate that you picked. But what they heard when he said, vote your conscience, was, oh my God, you're not going to endorse him. You can hear him. You can hear him in the background. Endorse Trump. Endorse Trump. And he wouldn't take. Wouldn't bite. But what's he going to say?
I appreciate the enthusiasm of the New York delegation.
I appreciate the enthusiasm of the New York delegate. And then he walked off the stage to booze. Now, wait a minute. Vote your conscience. Why is that such a stark thing to say? Why is that so poisonous? Because voting your conscience means not voting for Donald Trump.
Friends, delegates, and fellow Americans, I humbly and gratefully accept your nomination for the presidency of the United States.
And just like that, folks began falling away from the Republican Party. The number of Republicans that have decided not to endorse Donald Trump and have decided to get behind Hillary Clinton has absolutely been mind-blowing in recent days.
It's gone terribly wrong when one speaker says, vote your conscience, and gets booed. I mean, I never thought I would say these words, but Ted Cruz was right.
And the very next day, one David Duke, and we knew this was coming, David Duke from Louisiana came out and said, and by the way, I don't know if anyone has seen what David Duke looks like. He actually gets whiter all of the freaking time. I don't understand how he does it. It's like he's bleaching his skin. He loves whiteness so much. And then he came out the next day and he said, thank you. Thank you, Donald Trump. Because of you, white supremacists everywhere now have a voice.
After the great outpouring of overwhelming support, I'm proud to announce my candidacy for the United States Senate. I believe in equal rights for all and respect for all Americans. However, what makes me different is I also demand respect for the rights and the heritage of European Americans.
There it
is. I passed the only bill in America forbidding affirmative action programs that racially discriminate against the best qualified. Thousands of special interest groups stand up for African Americans, Mexican Americans, Jewish Americans, etc., etc. The fact is that European Americans need at least one man in the United States Senate, one man in the Congress who will defend their rights and heritage. We must stop the massive immigration and ethnic cleansing of the people whose forefathers created America. I was the first major candidate in modern times to promote the term and policy of America First.
After Ronald Reagan secured the nomination in 1980, he went to a place called Philadelphia, Mississippi. And I've talked about this on the show before. Philadelphia, Mississippi is known for one thing and one thing only. You understand, it's a relatively large place. Relative, But what they're known for is the fact that three civil rights workers were murdered there during the height of the civil rights movement. And it wasn't enough that they were murdered. It was covered up by local law enforcement at that time. There was a movie made about it called Mississippi Burning. But then Ronald Reagan decided to go there and give a speech about states' rights. And what that says to the Europeans, what that says to the white racists is, I will be there for you, white people. Now, Donald Trump didn't do that, but his son, Donald Trump Jr. did. As soon as their convention ended, Donald Trump Jr. went to, you guessed it, Philadelphia, Mississippi, and gave a speech at the same county fair that Ronald Reagan spoke at, and got up and gave a speech about states' rights. But he didn't stop there. He also said that the Confederate flag should get to remain a part of their state flag, because it's not about hate. It's about heritage.
The New York Times admitted that my platform became the GOP mainstream and propelled Republicans to control of Congress. They sold us out. I'm overjoyed to see Donald Trump and most Americans embrace most of the issues that I've championed for years. My slogan remains America First.
In an interview with MSNBC's Chuck Todd, Donald Trump said he wasn't totally certain he'd support a Democratic opponent to a white supremacist, David Duke, who said he had been inspired by Trump to run for a Louisiana Senate seat. Trump has in the past disavowed Duke, who has long supported his campaign, but his rejection of one of the country's best-known racists did seem lukewarm. This from Raw Story. Quote, David Duke announced his Senate candidacy claiming your agenda for his own, or essentially saying he's glad you spoke out, Todd told Trump. Newt Gingrich said every Republican should repudiate this guy no matter what he says. I did, Trump replied testily. I do. Todd then pressed him, asking, why would you support a Democrat over David Duke if that was necessary to, or would you support a Democrat over David Duke if that was necessary to defeat him? Trump responded that it depends on the Democrat. Huh. I guess depending on the Democrat, but the answer would be yes, Trump said. Look, answer is, I rebuke. Not sure he would vote for a Democrat over a white supremacist. This is all dog whistle language. But the racists, they hear it crystal clear.
Donald Trump is the Republican frontrunner. He's called Mexicans rapists.
Well, what about women?
How he's treated women.
Yes. I mean, unbelievable. I don't know how women can vote for someone who said what he said about Megyn Kelly. It's terrible. Mm-hmm. And we knew what he meant.
The last two Republican presidents, pretty much the entire Bush family, and most people that worked for the Bushes, have came out and said, this is not our guy. That was Barbara Bush, who sat down with CNN. And then Peter Werner, an advisor to Bush 41, came out as well.
The guy's the Republican nominee.
Yeah.
I think that's a shameful thing, but it's true. But whether it works or not, I'm not sure that really matters. I think it's all that Donald Trump knows. This is the way the man is. Mm-hmm. He pulls these pins on these grenades, and he rolls them, and then it explodes. And he says, "Gee, what happened?" Look, I think the guy has a personality disorder. I don't think he can control himself. So I think even if it's not in his interest to engage in this kind of stuff, he would do it. Beyond that, I think he does it because he is the most massively ignorant person ever to run for president, mm-hmm. and he cannot discuss public policy.
And it's not just enough that the Bushes and people that work for the Bushes are coming out against him. Other GOP strategists are coming out against him as well.
Donald Trump understands who these people are. I have come to believe that, as I said in the piece, it's not a feature, or it's not a bug, it's a feature. This is a guy who understands that the center of his play is this deeply resentful edge case group of people who really believe that the Jews control the world and that this is and that white nationalism is the future of American politics, and they range in sophistication from you know the guys who are fairly clever race baiters who try to stay out of the dirtier slums to the crazies in mom's basement screaming for hot pockets and a new Holocaust.
That's Rick Wilson, a GOP strategist. It was Ann Coulter that first convinced me that Donald Trump can and will get the nomination. And it startled me at the time. But Then it happened. So the question was asked, well, what happens now? Is he going to make it? Is he going to lose? Ann, please tell us next. So a reporter asked Ann at one of her book signings.
If Trump doesn't win, it's over. I'll be writing cookbooks and mysteries. It'll probably take some talk radio host and a certain TV network a while to figure that out. But it's over. Ask, you know, how thriving the talk radio industry is, or, you know, conservative politics in California. Once you, people don't keep going to the baseball game when you lose season after season. And look, presidential elections are won by a few million votes. If Hillary wins, we're going to be overwhelmed with refugees, with immigrants. That's it. It's lights out.
Other than the fact that she said that she's going to go to writing cookbooks and things of that nature, that clip right there didn't make any news. But hold on. First of all, I hope she goes to writing cookbooks because, man, I would way prefer that than her come out every year or so with a book called I Hate Liberals Part 1, Liberals Are Stupid Part 1, and whatever else you... I hate liberals. Fine, Ann, but hold on. She pointed out something there. The conservative television station, the conservative radio shows. Here's what nobody realizes. Allow Melvin to bring this to you right now. And I caught on to this pretty early. The real world, the world that most of us live in, and the world that a lot of conservatives, namely the conservatives, and not all conservatives, just the conservatives who only consume conservative media. I was listening to Brian Kilmeade earlier today, and a gentleman called Brian up. Brian's show comes on from 6 to 9 Western, which is the time zone I live in. And the guy said, I listen to Fox News from 6 in the morning until 9 at night. Just all day Fox News. He's got Fox Radio in the car. He's got Fox Television when he goes home. 100%. And I noticed on the trail right away what Donald Trump was talking about is the stuff that's being pushed on conservative talk radio and conservative television all day. And I don't mean that the whole media is conservative. I mean specifically on conservative media outlets. All the things he's saying are the things that have been being promoted on conservative talk radio. So, what is happening on conservative talk radio is never ever what's happening in the real world. If you listen to Sean Hannity, he tells you the exact opposite of what's happening. If you listen to Rush Limbaugh, exact opposite of what's happening. And those are probably the two worst. Well, no, there's Mark Levin. Mark Levin will lie to you too, as will Lars Larson. If you listen to what they're saying, especially if you listen to Alex Jones, if you listen to any of those people with any degree of, if you're at all conservative when you listen, I listen to them, but I'm not a conservative. I live in the real world. The things that they talk about, the things that they promote are not the things that are really happening. They're not the things that are happening in the world that most of us live in. The narrative that has been created by conservative media and right-wing talk radio, Donald Trump is a salesman. Donald Trump is a showman. And all he did, because he's got lots of conservative friends, was he took all those talking points. The Muslims are coming to kill us. Gays are ruining the country. So on and so forth. And he hit the stage saying those things. The fastest way to get somebody to trust you is to tell them things that they already know so that they can say that they relate to you so much. Now, he's the GOP nominee. He said the things out loud that were normally only said on conservative talk radio or conservative television that most of us don't know about. And those people that consume nothing but conservative media have picked this guy. But now the establishment, which has long loved the conservative media, long supported the conservative media, was so glad that they were there keeping the flock of sheep in line. Now that this guy is the nominee, they're realizing that perhaps they shouldn't have been telling a line of BS to those listeners for years. Because now that this guy is their nominee, their party is falling apart and fast. And loaded, loaded, how I have waited for this day.
You can't afford to stay home just because she might not align with you on every issue. You've got to get in the arena with her, because democracy isn't a spectator sport. America isn't about, yes, he will, It's about, yes, we can. And we're going to carry Hillary to victory this fall because that's what the moment demands.
But you know who is coming together? The Democrats are starting to come together. And they're pointing out that love trumps hate. And now, more and more of our media outlets that are not conservative are starting to become a lot more honest. I heard Fareed Zakaria, by the way, Fareed Zakaria has a lot of dignity, and he's incredibly smart. He's got a show on CNN called GPS, and even if you only watch the first 5 minutes of his show, you'll feel smarter at that moment than you did that morning when you woke up. Fareed is good, but even Fareed Zakaria cannot hold back when it comes to this guy.
Well, there's a pattern here, Wolf. Every time it is demonstrated that Donald Trump is plainly ignorant about some basic public policy issue, some well-known fact, he comes back with a certain bravado and tries to explain it away with a tweet or a statement. I mean, he did it on Brexit. He did it on the nuclear triad. He did it really on how U.S. debt markets work. He thought that Tim Kaine was the governor of New Jersey. And now with this. And it's sort of amusing to watch how is he going to pull it off this time? What is he going to, you know, argue? Usually he adds that the press hates him. But there's a term for this kind of thing. This is the mode of a British artist. And, you know, it's sometimes amusing. It's entertaining if the guy is trying to sell you a condo or a car. But for a president of the United States, it's deeply worrying.
He called him a BS artist. I can't say I don't want to. I won't swear on this show. But it was essentially, I had to edit that clip myself. So now the Republicans are leaving the party en masse now that this is their guy. Chris Ladd grew up in Beaumont and worked for more than a decade in Houston. And he moved to Chicago where he is a Republican precinct committeeman. This according to Daily Kos. He has a day job that he loves in the software industry. In his free time, he has written for David Frum's blog, The Washington Times, Communities, The Houston Chronicle, and The Huffington Post. And recently wrote an extraordinary resignation letter. Quote, with 3 decades invested in the Republican Party, there's a powerful temptation to shrug and soldier on. Despite the bold rhetoric, we all know Trump will lose. Why throw away a great personal investment over one bad nominee? Trump is not merely a poor candidate, but also an indictment of our character. Preserving a party is not a morally defensible goal if that party has lost its legitimacy. I will not contribute my name, my work, or my character to an utterly indefensible cause. No sensible adult demands moral purity from a political party, but conscience is meaningless without constraints. A party willing to lend its collective capital to Donald Trump has entered a compromise beyond any credible threshold of legitimacy. There is no redemption in being one of the good Nazis. I hereby resign my position as your township Republican committeeman. My 30-year tenure as a Republican is over. Sincerely, Chris Ladd.
This is really important.
Wait,
this is a historic election, right? Mm-hmm. We're either going to elect the first female president or the last president, period. People need to be a part of this.
Also from Daily Kos, members of the George W. Bush administration met in Dallas this April for a reunion party. Few, quote, few were as dark about the Republican Party's future as former President Bush himself. In a more intimate moment during the reunion, surrounded by a smaller clutch of former aides and advisors, Bush weighed in with an assessment so foreboding that some who related could not discern if it was gallows humor or blunt real politics. Quote, I'm worried, Bush told them, that I will be the last Republican president.
Whether you are gay or straight, the Bill of Rights protects the rights of all of us to live according to our conscience.
One of the more interesting things that happened at the RNC convention was they did try to reach out to gay Republicans, to the log cabin Republicans. And this is interesting to me because they picked Mike Pence. Back in 2012, the Democrats said, how the hell do we connect Mitt Romney to the Paul Ryan budget? And then he picked Paul Ryan to be his president or as his vice president. So this year, when Donald Trump became the nominee, the Democrats said, how do we connect him to Mike Pence? And then he picked Mike Pence to be his VP. And there is nobody more anti-gay than Mike Pence. But the GOP really did try this year to say, gay people, we hate you, but we are on your side.
Of course, every American has a unique identity. I am proud to be gay. I am proud to be a Republican. But most of all, I am proud to be an American.
That's Peter Thiel. He is the billionaire PayPal founder. And he said that, this is from Raw Story, said that he believes transfusions of blood from young people can reverse his aging process and allow him to live a vastly extended lifespan. In an interview with Inc.com's Jeff Bertovici, Thiel said that the practice known as parabiosis is the closest modern science has come to creating an anti-aging panacea. So, he believes that the blood of young people can help him maintain his age. And he believes that the Republican Party, horribly anti-gay Republican Party, is looking out for him.
I don't want to sound too much like a chauvinist, but when I come home and dinner's not ready, I'll go through the roof, okay?
I want to discuss the Bernie or bust advocates. I understand where they're coming from. And to the people I know that are Bernie or bust advocates, I've went ahead and left it alone. Because I live in Washington and Oregon. And these are blue states. These states are not going to go for Donald Trump. So let these folks vote however they want. Let them get the Green Party up to 15% so that they can get into debates or whatever. Fine. But I myself will be voting for Hillary Clinton. And that, well, that makes me a bit of a troublemaker amongst the people that I know. I don't see it as such a bad thing. My focus was getting Bernie elected. Now my focus has become making sure that Donald Trump does not become president. And here is why. Because Donald Trump will rain down hell on minorities, rain down hell on African Americans, rain down hell on women, rain down hell on Muslims, rain down hell on Mexicans. And I've noticed, up to this point, Bernie or bust advocates are white. Most of them are male. And dig this, if you are a white Christian male, it's pretty easy for you to be a Bernie or bust advocate because you are not the target of Donald Trump's attacks. Gay people are, black people are, Latino people are, women people are, anybody not a white Christian. So it's so easy for you because you're not the focus of those attacks. I am a white male and I am concerned about those attacks. And I'm concerned about my women. I'm concerned about my African-American brothers and sisters. I'm concerned about my Latino brothers and sisters. I'm concerned about my Muslim brothers and sisters. And I will be standing up for them. Donald Trump will not become president on my watch. Yeah, I'm not the focus of his attacks. But I'm going to stand up for my people. You go ahead and bust on.
The Bernie, can I just say, to the Bernie or bust people, you're being ridiculous. So I figured I'd add that.
I was embarrassed at the way my Democratic brothers and sisters acted at the convention. Somehow, I think a lot of them thought that they were going to help Bernie get the nomination by protesting and by yelling and by booing and just by generally being a jerk ass. Look, if you want to be upset because hell yeah, we worked hard. I gave a lot of money to that man. You know, I pounded the pavement for that guy. Spent a lot of hours inside school gyms in Indy and all the rest trying to get him to be the nominee. Because I feel like he was the strongest. He was the most progressive. But guess what? He's not. But a very, very evil man now is. This from Daily Kos. You say you want a revolution, but my son will die. Dear Bernie or bust advocates, I know revolutionary movements and revolutionaries accept that some people are going to die for the greater good, they imagine. In this case, for me, it's not some abstract idea of people dying. For my family, it's our beloved son. So I'm willing to beg, and I'm willing to ask and beg every single one of you Bernie or bust supporters to not let my son die. That's what it takes to get each and every precious vote to prevent Donald Trump from becoming the president. If Trump wins the presidency, then we won't have the House. Probably not the Senate and not the court either. Obamacare will be repealed. It will gleefully be one of their first actions. They've said that. And when it's repealed, my son's life will be drastically reduced. My son is a good young man. Without insurance, his medicine will cost $1,250 per month, and he won't be able to afford insurance without the ACA. He probably won't be able to get insurance without the ACA. My son, my dear beloved son, will, I can't even type it. Whatever I think about the possibility that would suddenly become a possibility, I start crying like I am now. So please excuse me if this is a bit disjointed writing. My son needs his medication or his life will be seriously shortened. The woman who wrote this is a teacher, and she's noticed that she has a second tumor growing on her spinal cord. She's only 57 years old. She's 10 years away from Medicare. So she needs Obamacare. And without Obamacare, she will not be able to get the care that she needs. Well, what about her husband? Maybe she can just go on her husband's insurance. My husband is 67 and has been putting off retiring out of fear of the possibility of a Trump presidency and what that would mean for his wife and son. He's 67 years old. I don't know how long he'll be able to work. He can add me to his health insurance as long as he keeps working. But remember, he is 67. I'm not going to ask you to vote for Hillary Clinton. But what I would ask is that you tone it down a bit. Because every time I hear, oh, we're just going to vote for Jill Stein. Oh, he'll become president for 4 years and it won't be a big deal when he's already talking about using nuclear weapons. It's easy for you if you have insurance. And you're not going to lose it if the ACA is repealed. It's easy for you if you're not a woman. It's easy for you if you're not black. It's easy for you if you're not Mexican. Easy for you thinking about you and only you.
They're going to be fine. Look, they worked hard. We had to show a little class and let them be frustrated for a while. It's okay.
Okay.
John, you got it?
Hey, they're all going to end up voting for Hillary. Come on, man. Do you think any of these guys are going to walk in and vote for Trump? Raise your hand if you think any of the people who are protesting here or hollering are going to go vote for Trump.
Some say they will.
They didn't support what Bernie stands for.
If you're going to vote for Trump, then clearly you did not know what Bernie stood for. So now that we are into the thick of the campaign, the poll numbers are now shifting towards Hillary. But they're shifting towards Hillary because Donald Trump has proven that he's not that capable right now. And he's saying a lot of things. He's constantly going off message. And one of the things that will help the Democrats win, good poll numbers are good, but it would be better if all of these states that have all of these laws that are trying to stop brown people from voting, it'd be nice if those laws were struck down. Wisconsin, struck down. North Carolina, struck down. And here's what's interesting about the North Carolina one. This from the Washington Post. Federal appeals court ruling that North Carolina's Republican-led legislature enacted new voting restrictions in 2013 to intentionally blunt the growing clout of African-American voters. The unanimous decision by a three-judge panel of the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fourth Circuit was an overwhelming victory for the Justice Department and civil rights groups. Election law experts consider North Carolina's voter law one of the nation's most far-reaching. In Wisconsin, where one federal judge already eased restrictions on voter ID requirements, a second judge found that additional elements of the law passed by the legislature and signed by Governor Walker were unconstitutional. U.S. District Judge James D. Patterson suggested he would strike the entire law if he were not bound by the Supreme Court's decision that states may use properly written voter ID laws to guard against voter fraud, of which none exists. The evidence in this case casts doubt on the notion that voter ID laws foster integrity and confidence, Peterson wrote. The Wisconsin experience demonstrates that a preoccupation with a mostly phantom election fraud leads to real incidents of disenfranchisement, which undermine rather than enhance confidence in elections, particularly in minority communities. To put it bluntly, Wisconsin's strict version of the voter ID law is a cure worse than the disease. In the North Carolina case, the Fourth Circuit panel agreed with allegations that North Carolina's omnibus bill selectively chose voter ID requirements, reduced the number of early voting days, and changed registration procedures in ways meant to harm blacks who overwhelmingly vote for the Democratic Party. The new provisions target African Americans with almost surgical precision, it said, impose cures for a problem that does not exist. Thus, the asserted justifications cannot and do not conceal the state's true motivations. Republicans said, what type of ID are African Americans least likely to have? This came up in court, and it was found they were least likely to have driver's licenses. So they have to have a driver's license. And they said, what kind of license are white people most likely to have? A concealed carry permit, which does not always have your picture. Okay, the concealed carry permits are okay. And now Trump is screaming that the process is rigged.
I'm afraid the election's going to be rigged. I have to be honest. Because
I think my side was rigged. If I didn't win by massive landslides, I mean, think of what we won in New York and Indiana, California, 78%. That's with other people in the race. But think of it. I hear more and more that the election on November 8th, can you believe we're almost there? This started on June 16th of last year. And I said, wow, let's go do it. It takes guts to do this, believe me. And everybody said, no, it takes guts. I could be having a very nice life right now. I don't have to be with you people ranting and raving, right? Could have a very nice life.
Oh, holy hell. First of all, African Americans are going to be allowed to vote. It's rigged. And then, by the way, I don't have to be here with you people. I could be having a very nice life right now. What?
I could be having a very nice life right now. I don't have to be with you people ranting and raving, right? Could have a very nice life.
And he's still trying very hard to bring it back to what is seen as his central issue, which is trade.
Can move their wealth and workers to foreign countries, all to the detriment of the American worker and the American economy itself. We reward companies for offshoring, and we punish companies for doing business in America and keeping our workers employed. They get punished. This is not a rising tide that lifts all boats. This is a wave of globalism that wipes out our middle class and our jobs along with it. We need reform, and we have to reform our economic system so that once again, we can all succeed together, and America can become rich again. We have to make America rich again.
And he still thinks that he's going to get the Bernie-crats, mostly the Bernie or bust people, largely on this one issue alone of trade. And I suppose that there is some truth to that.
The insiders wrote the rules of the game to keep themselves in power and in the money. That's why we're asking Bernie Sanders voters to join our movement. So together, we can fix the system for all Americans, so important.
And when he really, really wants to pull out the big guns, then he blends both rigging and the trade issue. Really, really thinks that he's going to get the Bernie-crats.
Hillary's people just swamped him. You're looking at Deborah Wasserman Schultz. I'll take our rights over her any day in terms of competence. Forget it. Not for being nice or any of those things. Who cares? I will take Reince in terms of competence over her, believe me, any day, any day. You see what she's done to that party. So I will tell you that I think we're going to get a lot of his voters because of the trade issue, because they understand. But because of the trade issue, I think we're going to get a lot of their voters.
In the publishing world, if you've got a name, but you're not necessarily a good writer, you can get what is called a ghostwriter. And Trump has talked about how he wrote The Art of the Deal. And he says it's his second favorite book, right behind the Bible, of course. The Art of the Deal. But Trump is not a writer. Trump is a child who can't focus on anything for more than a couple seconds at a time. And even his claim to fame, writing The Art of the Deal, has turned out to be a complete sham. And he has a ghostwriter. And that ghostwriter, by the way, it's a ghostwriter. You're not supposed to come forward. But recently, his ghostwriter came forward and said, my God, I should have never done this. I'm the guy that wrote it. And if he becomes president, I am so sorry.
I got to ask you about this sentence you said. I genuinely believe that if Trump wins and gets the nuclear codes, there's an excellent possibility it will lead to the end of civilization. That is an extreme statement.
You know, it's a terrifying thing. I haven't slept a night through since Donald Trump announced for president because I believe he is so insecure, so easily provoked, and not particularly nearly as smart as people might imagine he is. And in the face of somebody like Putin provoking him cleverly, because Putin's a heck of a lot smarter than Donald Trump, I do worry that with the nuclear codes, he would end civilization as we know it.
Give us one concrete example of why it would lead you to that kind of anxiety from your 18 months with him.
Well, he has an incredibly short attention span. He was unable to do interviews with me past 10 or 15 minutes, so that finally I had to sit in his office and pick up a phone by the 8 feet away from his desk to listen in on his calls so I could turn this into a book. The idea that we'd have somebody with a tiny attention span, my two-year-old grandson has a longer attention span than Donald Trump, is itself terrifying. This is a complex and difficult world, as we know just from the events of the last week, George. I mean, right in the middle of while I was writing this book, he was telling me about these great stories about his three casinos and how successful they were, while at the very same time, all three of them were going bankrupt. So no, it's full of falsehoods.
You regret writing the book?
I do regret writing the book. Had he not run for president, I wouldn't regret writing the book. But if in any way this contributes to his being elected president, you know, I think this is a man who has more sociopathic tendencies than any candidate in my adult life that I've observed. And so, yeah, I do regret writing the book.
He decided to run for president, not because he wanted to be president, but because he wanted to have more name recognition. He wanted his name to be worth more money. He got someone to write a book and put his name on it, not because he had an idea for a good book, but because he wanted his name out there. He wanted to be more famous. It was all about him. When you hear him in a speech, he uses the word I more than anything else because it's all about him. It has nothing to do with you. I promote on this show the idea of government because government is us. What we do together, we are the government. What we do collectively as a society will add or take away from our society. It's about us. It's about us working together for a common goal, for a collective idea. Us together, not one person. And he stood up at the RNC convention and said, I alone, I am the only one that can save America. I'm the only one that can defeat ISIS. I alone, I am the only guy. Just me. No one else. Just me. It wasn't about us. It was about him and him alone. But it is about us. And it is about democracy. And it is about the future of the country. And we are a melting pot. We are made up of not just men and women, but African Americans, Latinos, Chinese, Japanese, Thai, etc., etc. Different religions, Christian, Muslim, Hindu, all over the place. We are the great melding of all of these things. And to stand up, say that we're going to make somebody, our leader, or the head of our country, somebody who only promotes, I'm making air quotes, European values. European, it's our country, only I can do this. No. It's our country, but it's our country, all races. It's our country, all religions. It's our country, all genders. It's our country, we as Americans. We're a nation of immigrants. To stand up and promote white supremacy and to get so close to the White House doing it is absolutely insane to me. But listen, look around you right now. You're alive during this incredibly tumultuous time. This time in history, political scientists will be looking back on this time in history and saying, my God, what it must have been like to be there. And you, ladies and gentlemen, you're here right now. I'm here right now, and there are a lot of you, Bernier busters, that are talking about either A, staying home, or B, not voting against Donald Trump. What did you do when the man who dropped nuclear weapons on unsuspecting countries, what were you doing when he was running for president? Oh, I was slamming my fists on the table and saying, Harump, and I'm not going to do it, and I'm not going to go because my guy didn't win. Great for you. What about all those countries that got leveled? What about how America got leveled? I understand fear is not the way to run these things. But you are alive during one of the most interesting times in American politics. And we're creating a record of it. You should get involved. Whether you vote for Hillary Clinton or not, you should get involved. Run for something. Vote down ballot for good progressives, but holy hell, recognize the time that you're a part of. We usually only recognize these things in hindsight. You need to recognize it now, that you're a part of it right now, that this is one of the most interesting times in American politics right now, and get involved because you can do it and it's free. It won't cost you anything but a little bit of your time. And for that, you're likely to get a better country. For politicos like myself, these are the days that we live for. Ladies and gentlemen, Thank you for being here on their fire. You can't put out. I can't even say the name of my own show. Our official home is TFYCPO.podbean.com, but we're also on Kiwi Station. Shout out to Kiwi. Like us on Facebook at Facebook.com/TFYCPO. You can listen on the go. Just download the Kiwi Station app at the iTunes Store or at the Google Play Store for Android users. Individual episodes are available at the iTunes Store. Just search for The Fire. You can't put out there. You can also subscribe so that you, yes you, so that you never miss an episode. Questions, comments, or hate mail? My name is Melvin. Direct it my way. Come on. Come on, you can email us at tfycpo@gmail.com. We work hard to not only inform and entertain, but also to keep an open dialogue with our growing listener base. So feel free to reach out to us. And as always, thank you for listening. We are the fire you can't put out, and we will prevail, rejecting austerity in favor of prosperity. Special thanks to Cameron for producing, and a special thanks to you for listening. I see you out there. This is Melvin, signing off. Now that I've woken you up, good morning.